Welcome to another edition, a midweek edition of the Clock End Talk podcast, a podcast for Arsenal fans worldwide. Well, we've dropped Liam for tonight. Can I say that? Seeing I was meant to be on a two-week suspension. Tonight we're joined, as usual, by our regular guest, Tony. Hello, mate.
All right, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm always good, always good. And for me, a first time, I've got Addy on the other line. Addy, you there?
How you doing?
Yeah, good. Welcome to the podcast again. I did listen to you the other week. Just remind me, are you as miserable bastard as the rest of the pundits on this podcast?
No, you know me. I'm one of the more optimistic ones. But I was miserable under the last manager, I will say.
I think
just before we get started, I wanted to ask you about that because obviously you used to ring up a lot and you wanted Emery out before Emery was in, to be honest.
Yep.
So what's your stance on Arteta now?
So, my issue with Emery was from the first week. I didn't want him before he even came in, but from the first week was that he never had a plan for the team. I didn't know his best formation, his best starting 11, nothing. I didn't know how he wanted to play. He talked the talk, but we produced it in games. But I think that was solely on passion. With Arteta, he was never my first choice. I will honestly come and say that he wasn't even on my radar. But then after his press conference, I was like, okay. And I said to myself, I'm not gonna judge Arteta this season, performance wise, and where we finish. The only thing I'm gonna judge Arteta on is building a philosophy, a style of play, like just getting that message across and actually having a consistent team, consistent lineup. And to be fair, he did that after the first match. So for me, he's already met his target that I've set for Arteta. And at the moment, you know what, as small as it is, I think those little things build the foundation. And that's what Emery never had. Emery didn't have that foundation to build on. But Arteta's built that foundation. So as he tries to build, everybody knows what we can do minimum, what we're doing from the get-go. And I'm impressed. Obviously, the results haven't come.
Yeah, one win in seven. Come on, you gave Emery a week. You gave Emery a week, and now we've got one winning seven, but because he talks a good fight, you're up with Arteta. Good. Good to know your position.
I wouldn't say it's that. This is the thing. I said I'm not going to judge him. So that's why I've actually reserved all my, okay, oh, Arteta wasn't the first choice. We should have gone for a better manager. And to be fair, the managers were there that I felt that could have taken us and potentially done a better job, and we would have gotten a better start. But as I said, I'm going to give Arteta time and not judge him like how I judged Emery from the get-go, because I knew Emery was a fraud from the beginning. I won't lie to you. I knew that. But
well, you've got one of Tony's crystal balls. Good. Tony, let's start last night. You were at the game, I take it.
Yeah.
Look, unfortunately, I couldn't get a ticket, but that was as good an atmosphere as I think I've heard for a long time. How was it at the stadium yesterday?
I said coming out of the game is possibly one of the best I've ever been at. Thinking of away games, because I mean, I'm not going to count cup finals because you've got 30,000 people and obviously there's something major on the line. But in terms of just normal away games, I'd say maybe that and Old Trafford when Danny Welbeck scored in the FA Cup and we won 2-1. They're probably the two best I've ever been at. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was very alcohol-aided because, not me, to be honest, because I had to drive home, but because most people get public transport there, they didn't have to worry about only having one or two. And there's going to be some bad, bad hangovers today.
So is there a correlation here? I know that I want to get back onto the Lacazette argument already, but is there a correlation here between the fans really, really supporting the team and us getting a remarkable result? And if the stadium was filled with miserable bastards like it has been for a few years now, when our form at home has disappeared, is that a fact that the support was so good last night that lifted the team to perform miracles yesterday?
I don't know, because our away fans consistently good. I mean, we're always, even by fans that tend to hate us, we're always sort of regarded as the best set of, or at least one of the best set of away fans in the country. And our away results for the last 3 or 4 years have been horrific. And Arteta's come out and praised the home fans after every game. The other day after the... Who did we play the other day?
Southampton.
Sheffield United. The first thing the reporter said to him was, the fans stayed with you, and he said, yeah, they're fantastic again. And we haven't won a game at home since he's been there, so apart from Leeds, which, I mean, a league game. So I'd like to think, being part of that fan base yesterday, I'd love to say there is a correlation, but I really don't think there is, unfortunately.
No, okay. It wasn't anything to do with it. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I've just read through last night's on our WhatsApp group at Clock End Talk. I just read through the comments during the game, and I'm incensed by just how negative people can be. When the whole point when the game's going on, surely support them at least while they're fucking playing. And you can have a little moan afterwards, but while we're playing, have some belief, have some support for these boys out there, and you never know, it might just be a lot more fun watching. I mean, it was a remarkable game yesterday, Eddie. One of the better games, you know, we're all excited because we got a point away from home, but it was a remarkable game, really, wasn't it? In general, the fact that we're down to 10 men early on, we go down twice, and yet we managed to come back in real adverse situations. Addy, what was your general feeling coming away from that game yesterday?
One is that already Arteta has drilled the team well. Obviously, this is the second match we've gone down to 10 men away from home. Obviously, Crystal Palace and Chelsea now. And Crystal Palace, we could have won it at the end with when Pepe's shot hit the post from a good save from Guaita, and Lacazette could have followed up and scored the rebound. And as again here at Chelsea had chances, but they never dominated the match. Even when we went down to 10 men and Ozil dropped into centre mid alongside Torreira and Lacazette went deeper, there was a 15-minute period where, after the send-off, just up until half-time, where we actually kept the ball, dominated well, like, never threatened the goal in the first half, but we looked as if we could still be in the game, even though they had a man advantage. And when we didn't have the ball, we quickly got into shape. So I think it was, again, it shows the heart, it shows the passion, and you could say that was missing from the start of the season with these players. There wasn't no passion, there wasn't no heart, but you can see that through every single one of them that they're willing to fight for the manager, they're willing to fight for the badge, they're willing to give their all for the fans. And we questioned quite a lot of them from before Arteta came in, even under Ljungberg, a lot of players were questioned, and a lot of players in these seven games for Arteta, they've answered a lot of the critics, I would say.
Answered a lot of the critics. For me, when you say that statement, it makes me think there's not a player in that team, hardly, that's earning less than £5 million a year, and yet they can't be asked to run until our third manager of the season gets them going. I'd say they were, you know, there were some criticism.
I totally understand that point of view, but then whether I take it away from how much they're getting paid or anything like that, because even if they were getting paid like £5, I'm sure people, because they love the sport, they still want to play. But then I think that the environment under Emery was toxic. Everyone knew that, and that spread to the fan base. And I think through Arteta coming in, because even with Freddie, did it really go under Freddie? I don't really think so. But with all Arteta,
right. So let's take it back. All right, I understand. Let's take it back, Tony. Let's go back where we always start this podcast, with that formation last night. I think me and you both thought that they were going to play exactly the same team as they did at the weekend. And then there was the one shock, really, that Bellerin was fit enough to start. Didn't see that coming, did you?
No, I didn't expect it at all. And to be honest, even if you'd have said to me before the game, he's 100% fit, ready to go, I personally still wouldn't have played him.
No, me neither. Glad we did.
Well, yeah. Hindsight's 20/20, isn't it?
But that's about as good a side as we could have put out, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much, you look around and people might say Ceballos, but he hasn't played since early November. And every option was sort of the only option. You look up front and Eddie's not, we spoke about it the other day, Eddie's not realistically going to start for any of the front three. So Holding's not going to start. So you looked at it and go, apart from Ainsley, he picked basically all he could.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite interesting the fact that he picked Bellerin, though. I think I heard him say after the game that he asked Hector if he was fit enough to play, if he wanted to play, and Bellerin said yes, so he played him. He's obviously got a lot of faith, Addy, in Bellerin, and that's going to be good for Hector's confidence, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think it's going to definitely be good for his confidence. And I think, obviously, because he knows the lad. He's played with him when he was much younger, when in his last, I think his last season at the Emirates. So, yeah, no, I think he's going to give Bellerin huge confidence. And hopefully he can push on from there.
Yeah. I mean, right, let's take in this game. There's a lot of action in this game. It was an incredible game. Let me say that the first incident of note, should we say, the penalty, the sending off, the goal. But until that point, Tony, I mean, we're 25 minutes in, and we you know, it's very easy when we look back at hindsight to this game. I mean, it was a remarkable performance by our players to keep in it, to come back twice. But when we actually had 11 men on the side, we were pretty much under the cosh for that 25 minutes, were we not?
I thought the first 10 or 15 we were really bad and under pressure, couldn't keep the ball and whatnot. I thought maybe the 5 or 10 minutes before the penalty, I'm not saying we were the better team, but we were getting better than we were and sort of just coming into the game. Pepe had the run at Emerson where Emerson got booked. And we had a few that, like, crosses went in. They didn't go to anyone, but we'd started linking the passes together and keeping the ball a little bit better. I did feel we were just coming into the game, which was why the mistake and penalty and red card felt like at the time, well, they came at the worst possible time.
Yeah.
Because it was just like we just stepped into the game, and then that went in, they got that. And to be honest, I think most people there thought this could get embarrassing now.
Eddie, I think I saw a comment of yours about, it might have been from you actually, about Mustafi last night. Quite a strong opinion. I mean, I said on the podcast that we had at the weekend that I love watching Mustafi for 88 minutes. It's the 2 minutes, the other 2 minutes, that drive me fucking crazy because of these passes he tries to make, and because he's got a mistake in him. Well, there was a microcosm of Mustafi in that minute of the 25th minute of the game. He tries to thread a ball through about 19 players up to Pepe or Lacazette, doesn't come off. They attack, the ball comes back to him, he attempts a back pass. I'm shouting at the TV, home, just put it home, because I was worried that he was going to try another pass upfield. And yet he underhits a back pass and it develops from there. Addy, tell me what you think of Mustafi.
I won't lie to you. I actually am still baffled that he still plays for Arsenal, or he's still at the club. I think with me, obviously, people make mistakes and
Let me put the question to you slightly different, Andy. Take, and Tony, come in on this afterwards as well, if you would. Take that 2 minutes of Mustafi's game, or that 1 minute out of Mustafi's game yesterday. Wasn't he one of our better players?
Yes, he was good. But I will say it like this. You can't be a top-level defender if you make mistakes every single game.
Yeah. Tony?
I completely agree. I also agree he was one of our better players from 88 minutes, but football's a 90-minutes-plus stoppage time game. And and it's every week. I was actually speaking to someone earlier, and I said, if he'd done it 1 in 10 and played the other 9 games and 88 minutes how he does, you'd be fine. But it's a mistake every game. There's something you can point out, some bigger than others. Yesterday was huge, but there's always one incident every single game where you can go, that was like really bad and almost either cost a goal or almost cost a goal.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, look, I want to support every player. That's always been my line, but I do get so frustrated with him. It's just such a schoolboy error. And it causes such a problem there, doesn't it? Because he underhits the back pass. I heard Leno getting some shit because people, for some reason, don't want to support our players. And maybe he could have come out quicker. I don't know, but...
No way. As a goalkeeper myself, Leno was in the perfect position to receive the ball. If it went to him properly, he would have received it well and have time to make a decision.
Okay, Eddie, I'm not a goalkeeper, but you've heard me on this podcast, and I am such a big fan of our goalkeeper. I think he's a terrific goalkeeper. Tony, you're not so confident. I actually heard you say the other week you'd rather have Lloris in goal than our guy. So did you think Leno was at fault yesterday?
No, not at all. I felt he was a bit tentative in making the tackle, but he didn't want to get sent off. So
that's
fair enough. I mean, I knew it'd be interesting having Addy on, and because he's obviously part of the goalkeepers union, and yous lot are a strange bunch. But no, there's no blame on Leno at all. I even saw people blaming him for the penalty, which for me is ridiculous.
Yeah, Champions League final. Do you remember Jens Lehmann come running out and did exactly the opposite? He ran out, took him out. We're down to 10 men. You know, you could see Leno did the opposite there. He thought, "Fuck, I'm only going to get sent off." Pulled out the tackle. Yeah, I thought he was right. I love our goalkeeper. In fact, 3-2-1. Fuck it, I forgot to put Leno in. Leno, there you go. late addition. All right, so bad back pass by Mustafi. David Luiz. Now, there's been a lot of talk about this today. It's been quite a contentious issue with the double jeopardy rule. And for those that are unfamiliar with that, the sort of basis of the law, if I understand it correctly, is that as long as you make a genuine attempt to play the ball, then it's not considered a professional foul in the same context as it used to be. And a yellow card is an acceptable punishment instead of a red card and a penalty. Tony, what do you think? Penalty and sending off?
No, penalty and yellow.
Addy?
Same, penalty and yellow.
Yeah, watching the game live, though, did you compute all that? Because I got to say,
I did. I couldn't believe the red card was coming out. Obviously, I'd not seen a replay or anything, but I knew the rules.
Yeah.
And it seems like the players don't even know the rules, though, because Luiz was pointing at Mustafi saying, "I'm not the last man." But that was the rule.
Yeah.
It must have been 5 years ago now.
Yeah. Wasn't he not saying, it's not a clear goal scoring opportunity because he's, you know, he's there's somebody
But that's
there.
Not. So it's the old rule was a dogso, denying of an obvious goal scoring opportunity. But that's not been the rule for a long time now. I remember Alexis was not even Alexis's last year was when that rule came in. So I remember us beating Hull away. The year we signed Xhaka was when the rule changed.
Right, okay. Addy, so for you, it was a yellow card as well?
Yeah, totally yellow card. And you can see he didn't really go through the back of him. He went through the side of him because Abraham, to be fair, he fluffed the shot, but you could see he was trying to actually attempt to block the shot.
Yeah, didn't you think, because he just sort of stopped suddenly, he sort of ran in the back of him a bit, and that's...
Yeah, I think that's what... why the referee may have thought, oh, cool, he's just trying to take him out. But
and once again, why maybe that VAR didn't overturn it, because he stopped, and although he was attempting a block, he actually was knocking him over before he got down to take the block. Is that sort of fair, Addy?
Yeah. Sorry, Karen.
I was just going to say, is that now the another sort of half decision that's just gone against us this year?
I do think that, because, again, you've got people in the studio or in the VR place that don't actually play football, and it's like you can actually clearly see he's trying to block the ball, but it's they even get me started with VAR.
We're along the same lines on that one. Tony,
I would add that although I do think it's a penalty in the yellow, I see it quite similar to Aubameyang sending off, where I still don't think it's a sending off, but I don't think it's a horrendous. It's not like the penalty that Pepe didn't get. I think it's a mistake, but you can half see what they're on about, that if he's not fouled, Abraham probably rolls it in. But I do think it's a mistake, but I don't think it's one of them horrendous ones.
No, it's just another half one that's gone against us, isn't it? I think you can just chalk up another half. Eddie, were you at the game yesterday, or were you watching it on the television like myself?
No, I was watching it on the telly.
Yeah, okay. I mean, so I know how I felt, and I'm sure Eddie felt the same. In the ground, Tony, was there just that, you know, we're 25 minutes in, we've been under the cosh, you're right, probably 15 or 20 minutes of that 25. We haven't had a shot on target. We haven't had a shot at that time. How low did you feel in the ground? I mean, I'm sure Addy and I felt the same watching it. I tell you, you think, fuck, you know, like, it's just, we're one down, we're down to 10 men, we haven't had a shot. Is this going to be another 5-6-0? Did you feel like that in the ground, Tony?
Yeah, but I think we kind of sort of, and in years gone by, we've seen us reflect that attitude as fans. Like, oh no, if I can go again, but we sort of seem like we've got a, it felt like, oh, we're probably going to lose, but we've got to get behind them and try and keep it respectable, because it did feel like it can get embarrassing because they were so on top, and then obviously 1-0 down to 10 men. So it was, that was probably, I think the crowd got louder after the sending off, and it wasn't because we felt there was an injustice as such. It was just that I think it was like rallying behind them and trying to just keep them in the game as long as possible.
I almost want to transcribe exactly every word that you just said and put that on the WhatsApp group every time that we go a goal behind. Do you know, isn't that the time when we really, as supporters, have to really dig in and support rather than just start slagging everyone off? I mean, that's just my personal opinion as a supporter. And I sometimes wonder if our fans know the word supporter. So anyway, we're 25 just, minutes in.
Sorry.
Go on.
So I'm just going to say, just to come in with that, I think that, for example, when Man City came to the Emirates and played us off the park, I think it's much easier for our supporters to actually say, okay, cool, no, okay, they've played us off the park, or they're playing good football and they scored a good goal. There might be issues and problems in certain positions, but they scored a good goal. And then you can try and rally the support there. But when you've got someone making huge errors, and you're saying to yourself, what did I sign up for this? I didn't sign up for Mustafi trying to do a volley from 40 yards away back to Leno, and then he miskicks it, and then Luiz gets sent off, penalty, and Chelsea all on top of us. And I think that's where it is, where you because of that moment of madness, your head's just blown off, and there's been a lot of moment of madness. Luiz at Anfield, pulling Salah back, like, this is too many, and I think the supporters are just like, oh.
So what did you sign up for? What did you sign up for? If we end up being mid-table for the next 10 years, what's that mean? You just give up and go and support someone else? You know, this is the point. You know, take it, you know, let's take a Southampton who are, you know, avoid relegation, hope to finish mid-table. Crystal Palace, avoid relegation, hope to finish mid-table. I know we're Arsenal. I know we've got huge ambitions. We want to win the Champions League. We want to win the Premier League. But if we do have 10 years in the wilderness, what does that mean? Do we just slag off our players, or do you have to, you know, you have to build and support them? You know, I'm sure it's a lot better journey for Leicester fans than it is for Arsenal fans sometimes. You know, it's you go to places like Palace and Leicester where the grounds are buzzing because the fans get behind the team. So I just find it a little bit strange that we're such a huge club and yet we have such a negative fan base.
I say to a couple of my friends that because we've been spoilt in the earlier days and with under Arsene Wenger, like we still think that we are at that level and we deserve to be at that level, top two, fight for the Premier League, and I think we just need to like get not back down to earth and say okay, no, this is a rebuild now, and we just need to start again and build a team up and as a team is building, I think as well. Just the fans need to understand that, and I think that's why there's that that lack of support. I would say.
You said you gave Emery a week.
No. I didn't even give it. To be fair, I think that's a mischaracterization. I didn't even give him a day.
Okay, there you go. There's the positivity. Let's get back to the game then. So we held on till half time. Leno made a couple of good saves. We put Xhaka back into the back four. Let's focus on our manager Arteta. That we were talking on the last podcast after the Sheffield United game about some indecision when we were 1-0 up and he had Willock stripped to come on, then he changed his mind, and then he had Guendouzi stripped to come on, then they scored and he changed his mind again. When that goal went in yesterday, I don't know if you saw this in the ground, Tony. This is only going by the commentators on the television who obviously have some knowledge of the fourth official. And they said that the board was ready, Holding was ready, and Martinelli was going to come off. Did you see any of that, Tony?
Yeah, so it was our side. Holding was ready for ages.
He even put his coat back on, didn't he?
yeah, but he was standing on the touchline for a long time. Yeah. Arteta, in his interview after, they said, were you going to take Martinelli off? And he said, not him. But somehow that's been missed and everyone's decided that it was definitely going to be Martinelli.
Well, as I say, that's just because of what they said on the TV.
After the game, I've watched the game back, but after the game, Arteta, they asked him directly and he said, not him. He didn't say who it was going to be.
I thought he actually said, I've watched more than one interview of his, and I thought he said, we thought of more than one player.
I've only seen one where he said, not him. There may be others, and that's maybe why everyone's going off it, and I think something different. But yeah, obviously he changed his mind. I don't know. To be fair, we saw Holding come back, and we kind of thought it's Martinelli or Ozil. That was what people were thinking.
It's funny though, isn't it? Why? I mean, I agree. I absolutely 100% agree with you, Tony. My thoughts were Martinelli, Ozil or Pepe. They were the three I was thinking.
What the commentators said. I watched it back and that's what the commentators said as well.
Okay, because I thought Ozil was his usual ineffective self in a lot of ways. Martinelli's the new kid on the block. And Pepe, you know, you can possibly... Martinelli works harder than Pepe, so maybe they'd keep him on. But did you think we needed to make a change at that time?
I think... He got Holding ready basically as soon as the penalty went in, even before that. And I think it's just a done thing in football management. Like you lose a defender, you bring a defender on, and then whether he let it or it was luck or judgment, he let it play out for 2 minutes, and we absolutely dominated the ball. We got a corner, which I think was only our second one or maybe our first one of the game at the time, and he told Holding to sit down and carried on with Xhaka at centre back.
So, so Eddie, is indecisiveness sort of paid off for us, do you think?
Yes, I do. And just Tony, he had it in his press conference after the game. They asked him, "Were you going to take off Martinelli?" He said, "Yes," but then he ran 60 yards, and then I kept him on.
No, he said that about later in the game. He said that he was going down with cramp. He looked injured, and then next second he's doing a 60-yard sprint. He meant that not at the sending off.
Oh yeah, no, sorry, not for the center. I was saying just about that indecision of take Martinelli off. But yeah, I think this is where my criticism of Arteta was just that inexperience, and I feel he is going to have to go through this of okay, who does he bring on? What subs he has to make? And I think the substitutions that he made yesterday worked well.
Yeah, I think Tony said it at the last podcast. I think sometimes because we've got so many injuries in so many players, I think there's no obvious player on the bench to bring on. I mean, that was sort of the issue, I think, yesterday. Holding, you know, do you bring Holding on, who has had no football, who's not match fit, who had a terrible game his last appearance against Leeds? Do you make that decision? And I think he wasn't sure. And thankfully, as Tony said, I think the ball went up the other end and we just had that little bit of time to make him think, well, let's just see this out to half time. That's what I was trying to say to the TV last night. Hold on, just hold on, relax, rest. You know, like, is Holding going to be the best shout? I don't think he is, you know.
I think the vast majority of managers, though, would have done it as soon as the penalty went in, so before we kicked off. I think so. I don't know if it's his inexperiences. I think, as I said, most experienced managers would have done it straight away.
Agreed.
So it's I don't know if you can say his inexperience led to it or what it is, but obviously, and again, it's hindsight, it's 2020, because he's ended up with Xhaka at centre back for 70 odd minutes and we've got a result. But if he doesn't and they score in the next 2 minutes with Xhaka at centre back, then he's an idiot and he's inexperienced. Then why did he leave a slow centre midfielder at centre back?
Yeah, we didn't know what was going to happen with Xhaka. So nothing much happened then until we did make a substitution, 55th minute, I think it was, from my notes. Guendouzi comes on for Ozil. I thought it was a good substitution myself. I thought that Ozil, I keep wanting to like Ozil. I keep wanting him to have good games and I'll keep supporting him. But it was one of those games when you're looking, what can we do now? And he was a little ineffectual, Addy. So bringing on Guendouzi was just a good pair of extra legs in midfield.
Yeah. And this is me. I'm known as a Ozil fanboy, and I feel that because of the situation he just wasn't effective. Nothing he could have done in that game would have affected us in a positive way. I feel he sat in properly. Did the job well, helped, kept his shape when he went into centre midfield alongside Torreira. But that energy from Guendouzi, even though he's erratic, I was thinking potentially Ceballos, because he will still give you the same energy levels as Guendouzi, but maybe a little bit cuter on the ball and potentially creating a little bit more. I was thinking potentially Ceballos, but you know what? Guendouzi was good. It was just that little bit of energy, that substitution. Yeah, it was good that he did it early, that he didn't wait until 70th or 75th minute.
Yeah, I think it was his earliest substitution he'd made so far. Tony, you agree Guendouzi was good, or would you have gone Willock or Ceballos?
No, I think it's exactly right. And look, I'm very much not a Guendouzi fan and I'm very much an Ozil fan, but I personally may have done it at half-time. I'd probably done it a bit earlier, if anything, just because Ozil's not going to offer you that box to box. As I said, I thought he'd done everything he could with his skill set. Once he dropped deeper, he kept the ball pretty well, never really gave it away, tried to tackle, can't tackle, we know that. So it was just, he was never going to have an effect on that game from centre midfield.
Yeah.
So as I said, for me, I may have done it a little bit earlier, no complaints at all.
So Tony, while you're still there, 63rd minute, Chelsea corner, Martinelli's in a 6-yard box. Talk me through the next 30 seconds.
It took so long. I've seen today it actually took him 13 seconds.
Yeah.
It took about 13 hours, I think. It was kind of, and you know when someone has that sort of bad touch and you're groaning and you see Kante slip, and you're like, he's in. And you're just waiting. It reminded me of Ramsey at Wembley against Tottenham last year. You're just waiting and it sort of feels like, don't fuck it up, don't fuck it up, don't fuck it up. And I've only spoke to one person who said, I think he should have passed it to Pepe. I was just thinking, take it yourself. Like, you've run the length of the pitch. Just pull it in now. And obviously he did. And the boy is so calm and he's just so cold in front of goal. He doesn't care. Like, and his celebration, you think it's only his third league goal. And he hasn't really celebrated any of them. West Ham, he went and got the ball and bring it back. That Sheffield United, he didn't really celebrate. And then yesterday he's gone 1-1. With 10 men at Chelsea, traditionally a huge club, and he just stood there. And it's like, nothing fazes him. I, I, we sang his name for pretty much the whole second half yesterday, and I don't even think he played well, like, or that as well. To sing, but he's just so calm and everything and about it.
It was a terrible touch, wasn't it? I mean, if Kante hadn't slipped over there, Addy, then that attack goes nowhere.
You see his face when, if you watch the video, Martinelli's face is like, oh no, and then Kante slips and he's just gone.
Yeah, no. I won't lie to you. As you just mentioned that, I just big smile on my face because I think I've watched that goal 100 times. I've watched it in English, in Spanish, in Brazilian. Portuguese. I've actually watched it in multiple languages. That's how much I've loved it. And it was just amazing. And the composure he has as well, just to slot it away.
Did you think pass it to Pepe?
I'd even see Pepe. I won't even lie to you. I did as he went past Kante, I did not see Pepe. All I saw was Kepa and Martinelli, and I was confident. And it was arrogant, and that's what I loved about it.
Tony, I've got to be honest, I'm probably the second one. I saw Pepe and I thought, just nick it to the side now, because I thought he'd be so knackered after that 80-yard run. You see so many strikers do that and then fluff the finish because they're so tired. And I thought Pepe burst a gut to get there. And one of the things I used to love about the Arsenal side just before the Invincibles, when you had Henri, they would always try and play the fancy goal. Do you know? They'd always try to put a goalkeeper on his arse and make fun of it. But the nature of the state of the game at the time, I'm very happy he finished it himself. What happened next? So that's 1-1. I was watching it with one of my best Arsenal mate last night who sits next to me at the Emirates, and we were then saying, well, we know we're going to fucking let in another one because we're too happy. Did you feel like that in the ground, or did you feel like we were going to hang on?
No, I felt like we were going to concede, but it's one of them weird situations, and I've had it before, where you kind of think, they are going to score, so can they do it quickly so we've got time to recover? Like, the later it's ticking, you're kind of like, you're kind of more nervous because you think, oh, if they score now, it's done. So, you don't want them to score, but when the clock's going sort of 70, 75, you're thinking, well, it's getting too late now, sort of, if they're going to do it. And then, obviously, it came in the 83rd, and I think it was, and we just...
Yeah, that's it. I've got it down 83rd minute. I don't want to criticise him because he had such a exemplary performance yesterday, but Xhaka's only mistake of the match yesterday, that
because I was watching it, because initially I was thinking, oh yeah, maybe it was offside, VAR might save us because Tammy Abraham looks like in a dodgy position, but no, Xhaka played him onside, and it was like, yeah, to be fair he played well when he started back into centre back, and I was like, yeah, that was the only mistake that he made, that he played him onside. But you know what?
And you can't even blame him for it, because it's not his position. He isn't drilled like the others. And I think it was Holding, I think, who took them out. You know, it was Holding who made the call, and they all went up. They all went up a yard, and he went back a yard. He ran with the players, and he played them all onside. I don't know if you noticed that in the ground. I guess you've seen it afterwards, Tony.
Yeah, I've seen it after, and I think there's half a shout for offside. And I usually class myself as not the most biased Arsenal fan, so I would hope this is not coming from a point of bias. But I think Abraham stopped Holding and going for that ball, because if he goes for it, he fouls Abraham, and then obviously the defender thinks, don't touch him in the area. Obviously, I know Abraham didn't touch it, but I just think he's in an offside position, and he stopped Holding going for it.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the penalty being sort of one of those decisions, half chances that have gone against us, I'd agree. That's a 20% chance, isn't it? I think if it had been given offside because he'd been interfering with play, then I don't think anyone would have been too angry from our side.
Yeah. Again, that's one of the. I think the other one, as you said, is like you expect it to go for us, but it's not horrendous if it goes against us. I think that's probably the other way around. You expect it to go against us, but if it does go for us, it's not like the worst decision ever in terms of if you're coming from the Chelsea point of view.
So we're in the 84th minute. We kick off again. We played very brightly, and you can see Chelsea's inexperience, I think, at this point, because they sat back suddenly. They got a bit nervous, which they shouldn't have been. They should have killed the game off. And we're not really going anywhere. Bellerin's hovering about on the left-hand side. They're trying to show him inside because he hasn't got a left foot. And what does he do, Addy? He sort of bends a P-roller into the far corner.
You know, again, I think the Arsenal Twitter feed is amazing. They had a video of Kieran Tierney and Bellerin doing some fitness work when they first came back from injury, and that you had the fitness instructor saying, oh yeah, have you heard Bellerin? Bellerin's got the best left foot at the club. He's like, yeah, my left foot's really good, you know. And then obviously Bellerin on his left foot again just remind me of Liverpool at home when he slotted it left foot. It was this, literally, I just said shoot, and obviously looking at the TV, and again, I just, and it was funny how he celebrated, because it's like he didn't think he scored or it was going to be ruled off for offside or something. It was just like a huge anticlimax. Like I thought he was going to run over to the fans or something.
But it just fucked, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, just thought, I can't do this, because the other players ran towards the corner flag and towards the fans, and he just sort of like trotted about.
I was going to mention that. I was going to say that, Tony, to you. I mean, that was a question. I think in a normal game, he would have been off after an hour, wouldn't he? I mean, that would have been a regulation substitution. He's back
after. Well, again, you've not mentioned it. Ainsley was stripped as well at one point, and they changed their mind. I don't know if they commented on that on TV, but
yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
I was probably hiding behind a sofa at that point. I must have missed that one. So Bellerin comes up. Addy, so you're part of this goalkeeping fraternity. Wouldn't you? I mean, this is another goalkeeper that I think. Oh, actually, Tony said you didn't like the Chelsea goalkeeper as much as Leno. Don't you think if that had been against us, I'm a huge Leno fan, but I would have been really disappointed if Leno hadn't have saved that shot at the end.
100%. Like, I think Kepa is not even close to Leno's level. His footwork was so rich, literally so bad. As a top class goalkeeper, should have been two steps to the right and push it around the post.
Yeah, he was a little unsighted, but it wasn't exactly struck with any fury, was it?
That's the issue. And it wasn't like, oh, it's 8 yards out or 10 yards out. It was edge of the box, or even just just out of the box. So he would have got a good sight of it. And he should have moved his legs quicker and tipped around the post. But yeah, he's not even top 10 goalkeepers in the Premier League.
So we've got holding.
I'll just say before you move on, how stupid were Chelsea? We had the ball because Abraham went down there saying put it out, and then they got it back and tried to run up the pitch. Like what? No. I'd be furious if that was us.
Yeah. So we'd made a couple of substitutions. I missed the one holding come on for Pepe. That was probably about right as well. Tighten up at the back. Pepe had sort of done as much as he was going to do, I guess. And then Willock come on at the end for Martinelli because he could hardly walk by this point. Just fresh legs. But I thought we were looking more likely to score than them in that last 3 or 4 minutes. I thought, if anything, we're going to nick a winner.
It didn't feel like it. I can tell you that. We're holding on to everything. Like people, chairs, railings. And when they got that corner at the end, you just feel like I've seen this story before.
Did you see that? After we've got another 30 seconds, we were breaking away again. Lacazette had picked it up, the same as Martin.
Yeah, but I don't know what happened because as the whistle went, he kind of started limping a bit. There's no way Lacazette's running the length of the pitch. I know we've just seen Martinelli do it. There's not a fucking chance in hell.
All right, we've been speaking for 43 minutes on this podcast, which is far longer than I wanted to spend on the game. But it was an exciting game with lots of content, lots of things happening. We're all in a good mood for getting another, you know, good result in adversity. However, you know, should we look at this playing devil's advocate? I'm sure I don't really want to be critical after yesterday, but that's you know, with 11 men, we didn't have a shot. In the whole 90 minutes, we had just two shots in the whole game against the Chelsea side that's been fairly fragile, especially at home. They had 19 shots to our two. They had better possession. They had better territorial advantage. They had better passing statistics. As I said, lots more shots. I mean, are we getting a bit excited here when really we should be looking at this and saying, fuck, we got battered again by Chelsea?
Not for me. That's exactly how you play with 10 men. You've got to accept they're going to have more of the ball. They're going to have better chances. They're just a distance run. They're going to naturally run much more because they've got an extra man doing the running. I think that's almost a blueprint of how you play with 10 men.
But, Eddie, before we went down to 10 men, didn't look very positive,
yeah,
did it?
20, we had a shot in 25 minutes. The sample size is not...
Well, 25 minutes is a third, a third of the game, pretty much. Just under a third of the game, and we hadn't had a shot. In a game that we built up as a must-win, that Arteta said was a must-win.
Obviously, again, similar to what Tony said, I think we were just slowly coming into the game. But then I would say, whether we played good or not, I think it was, at the end of it, the point, getting the point, because Chelsea came to the Emirates and we outplayed them all game and they went away with the 3 points.
No, they outplayed them for the first half. They battered us in the second half. They battered us in the second half. I was there. It was one-way traffic. It was men against boys. We couldn't get the ball off them. They had more energy. They won every second ball. We weren't in it. I mean, but we defended well, like we did against them yesterday. We defended well, and it didn't look like they were going to break us down. But we didn't look like scoring in that second half. Anyway, look, I don't want to be negative because it was such a good, and I am the positive Arsenal fan. I build myself. Let's take it another angle on it. Do we see this, Tony, as, we've had one win in six with Arteta now, but that felt like a turning point where we got a deserved point out of an incredible, energetic performance. Do you think that the players will maybe just build on that? I think Arteta mentioned it in his press conference after the game that he said, I don't know. I hope so. I hope they want to take it to the next level. Do you feel that was that sort of game yesterday?
That's exactly what it felt like. And I think that's part of the reason why we kind of half felt like it was a win, because someone said as we was coming out the ground and we were chanting for on the trains on the way back, like literally an hour or eight later, there was people still on the trains chanting. And someone said, and I probably agree with them, I don't think under Wenger that happens. I don't think under Emery. I think we lose them that game comfortably under both of them. And I don't know about before Wenger because I can't remember. I'm not old enough. But it just, I mean, it really does feel like a sort of sliding doors moment. But he's right to say, I don't know, because the Leicester felt like a sliding doors moment when we beat him 2-1 and Welbeck scored and it wasn't. So he'd be... Arteta's very clever in the way he speaks. He's very safe. He doesn't say, yeah, this is a sliding door moment and we're going to be fantastic. Because then if you go out and lose the next game, it's like all these quotes start going round, and even if they're not on TV, they'll be going around on social media. I mean, I still pretty much see retweeted daily Rio Ferdinand saying, oh, Ollie's at the wheel, Man United are back. And I think I see that quote every single day. So it seems like Arteta's very calculated, and whether he's been PR trained or whatever it is, he never says anything that can sort of come back to bite him in the arse. So I think that's why he said he don't know. But I know internally, well, I assume internally, him and the players will be feeling like that is a huge moment, a huge 90 minutes.
Yeah, it felt very much like that. Same for you, Eddie?
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree. With what Tony said, yeah.
All right, well, I mean, I agree. I just felt it felt like that. It just felt like we all got together. Players, fans, Xhaka, everyone. Apart from still the criticism for Lacazette, which I read, which we'll get on to. We're all pulling in the same direction. We're recording this, by the way, those of you who are listening to it, we're recording this on Wednesday evening. And just seen the final score there, that Manchester United had just been beaten at home 2-0 by Burnley. Don't think that Solskjaer's comment's going to come up today. Unfortunately, Spurs beat Norwich, so and Leicester won. So we've lost a bit of ground on Tottenham, lost a bit of ground on Leicester. 3-2-1s. For those of you who don't listen to this podcast, we give our man of the match our best, our first, second and third players in our man of the match. Very tough again, I thought, in this game, Addy. More in this instance because we had so many players who played well. But who do you give your 3 points to?
My 3 points, I would actually give it to Saka. I thought for someone of his age, he had a, I think first half a little bit shakier. I think Hudson-Odoi was going at him, but second half he was solid. And like I would actually give it to Saka at left back.
Not a bad shout. Tony?
Can I just say before I've done mine, I've seen a lot of people saying our Saka's amazing and we don't ever need to sign a left back keeping their permanent team. And to be honest, I thought he got an absolute runaround for the first 45 minutes. And we bring up his age, but Hudson-Odoi is the same age. And he was good in the second half. But when I've seen people saying, oh, we never need to sign anyone again sort of thing, yeah. He's our first choice left back for the next 15 years. And I thought,
nope.
Did you not watch what happened early on?
Now, I think, Tony, on that, I think there's a good chat. Is that, you know, where there's a lot of talk of us, we talked about it on the last podcast, the talk about signing a new left-back. I think the comments really should be, we've got, you know, Tierney and we've got Kolasinac and, you know, a real good third choice if we ever get in this fucking injury situation again.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's got to be where it is. And you're right. Anyone who says he's first choice, is it's nonsense. So who's your 3 points go to, Tony?
Granit Xhaka, just that you don't expect him to do well there, and he's done very well. Also, for someone who's not a centre back, he seemed to pick his timings of when to pass it and when to smash fuck out of it. And our centre backs can't do that. Our centre backs seem to not know when is the right time to do things. There was a couple of times he went to, I think he tried to make the educated foul and somehow got the ball. There's one time he slipped and made a slide tackle with his head.
Yeah,
not overly advisable, but it off work. There was a time in the second half where Abraham isolated him one-on-one on the wing and you thought, oh no. And he made the perfect tackle and left Abraham on his arse as well, just for sort of added effect. The touch from where Batshuayi missed a chance after it went 2-2. I think if Xhaka doesn't get that touch, they score. I think you couldn't ask for any more for him from someone that's been played out of position.
Yeah, I think it's a really good shout, Tony. He only didn't get my three, or didn't get in my 3-2-1. Just because of the mistake. It was like saying, I want to have Mustafi in there because he played really well, but playing him onside, it weren't his fault, weren't his position, but if he'd just stepped up with the others, we might just have won that game. My three is quite an obvious one. I'm going for Martinelli. I just thought his work rate was immense, scored a good goal, was constantly helping Saka back in that left side, was a constant threat going forward, worked his nuts off. I just think Martinelli's just, it was just a joy to watch him yesterday. Addy, your 2 points?
2 points, I would say Martinelli. Again, same points that you raised. I think he worked his bollocks off and scored a tremendous goal.
Tony?
Yeah, Gabby, for me. To be honest, had I not watched the game back on TV today, I would have given it to Martinelli because I felt like I sang his name for about an hour yesterday. My mate that was sitting next to me or stood next to me texted me today saying, I thought you was a broken record because all you ever kept saying was go on Gabby whenever the ball was within about 20 yards of him. I was like, go on Gabby. Having watched it back, as I said earlier, I don't actually think he played that well, but he just gives you hope. As I said, he's relentless. He goes backwards and forwards with the same energy. He gets a chance and you just feel like you're going to score. And he's got a huge goal, a huge vital goal. Gave us something to cling on to for an extra 20 minutes. Martinelli.
Okay, I'll give my two to Torreira. Maybe it's just a combination of the last few weeks and the amount of time he spent down injured yesterday. He is such a cheating twat. And we needed that yesterday to rest up. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a player get injured so many times in a game. And when he ran out of parts of his body to hold, he went down with cramp and yet still managed to stay on for 90 minutes. So just for that performance, and it was a performance, I'll give that to Torreira. 1 point for you, Addy?
My 1 point goes to Leno. I think at times in the game, he made good saves. I won't say anything was spectacular, but he made the saves and he didn't fail. I think he still needs to work on his distribution a bit. But then in the first half, when we had to go long, he actually went long. He didn't say, oh, let's still play short and everything like that. When we could play short and Chelsea let us play, then we played. But yeah, one for Leno.
Tony?
Hector, I'm not his biggest fan, but I don't think he really done anything wrong. had he not scored, I think he'd be sort of middle of the road performance for me. He didn't really do anything wrong, didn't do anything fantastic. The fact is he did score. So that probably just tips him above other players. Again, there was probably other players that performed better as a whole 90, but moments win or affect games more than anything else. It's obviously why Mustafi isn't here, because you judge it on the key moments, and Hector in the key moments came up trumps.
Yeah. Well, out of my one, I've got a short list of Mustafi, Leno, Bellerin, Xhaka and Saka. I'm going to go with the goalkeepers union. I'm going to go for Leno. And again, I don't think he did anything outstanding, but isn't it nice to have a goal? He made, I think it was one error I saw yesterday, again against Sheffield United. He came out for one cross. I think he sometimes doesn't read that flight of the ball very well. But I thought the save from that glancing header,
he got
down low, pushed it just around his right-hand post. You expect him to save that because he's a great goalkeeper, but we really needed it at that time. We needed a goalkeeper to do that, and everything stuck to him. So I just think if we'd have had anybody else in goal, anything that bounces off him, we wouldn't have got anything out of that game. Anyway, good. Well, we're done 55 minutes. I said, can we just keep it to an hour tonight? Because I've got an early start tomorrow. Fuck. Have we got any questions, Tom? But is there anything else in the game that we want to talk about? No? Good. I didn't look if we had any questions. I haven't seen
we've
anything.
Got a fuck ton. I'll go through them as quick as I can. And if we spoke about something, I'll just read it out.
I think that's key. Look, thanks everyone for sending these questions. And we, as you know, we always try to read out all of your questions. And obviously, if we haven't covered them in the first part of the show, then we always try to cover them. But it is up past 10 on a Wednesday night. Can't do another hour. Go on, Tom.
MWA Gunner, can you explain the system with Bellerin instead of Aitlin Maitland-Niles, and which one do you prefer? I was going to touch on this, but I'd seen this question earlier. I think Hector played the role completely differently. He didn't come into the middle as much. Maitland-Niles used probably most of his touches of what you'd class as a centre midfield position. Hector pretty much stayed on the outside. I don't know what I prefer. What I saw yesterday was more traditional. I don't know if either of you have any particular feelings on it.
I feel we didn't have control of the game initially to see Hector potentially go into that position. And once Luiz went off, it was a thing where I don't think Arteta would have wanted him to do that in a game. So I didn't even mind, to be fair.
My only point on Hector, he was my favourite player in the club 3-4 years ago. He looked to me like, when there was all the talk of him going back to Barcelona, he looked like he was going to be the best right back in the Premier League. His last couple of years under Wenger, he didn't improve. He got slightly worse. He didn't have anyone playing in front of him. There was no Pepe in front of him. He had Walcott or somebody else shit, so he tended to come back inside a lot. And then under Emery, I thought it was one of the very few things that Emery did well. We got him playing quite well in the first 6 months of his first season, and then he got injured. I really hope he comes back to the sort of player that he had the potential to be. And then there's absolutely no argument. It's Hector all day for me, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him playing with a really good player in front of him like Pepe.
Okay, next question, MWA Gunner again. Very ironic how poor Emery was, but got away with it due to a lot of luck, but Arteta is doing well and all our luck has dried up. How was Emery close to getting a renewal? Oh, fuck, nice. There's a last question. I really don't know. Like, even if you'd see that you don't think last season was catastrophic, I don't think anyone, even his biggest fan, thought this is someone we need to offer a new contract to.
Do you know, Tone? I mean, look, Emery pissed us all off by the end, and after one day, where Addy's coming from. But if we'd have, and it's a big if because we didn't, but if we'd have won our last six games, well, we could have done, all on paper, they were all winnable games. We'd have finished not only third, but we'd have finished maybe 8 or 9 points clear of fourth. And that's where you can see him getting a new contract.
They were discussing it in the summer after the Europa League final. I think this is where the question's coming from. That's what I'm saying. Even the strongest of Emery fans, even if they wanted it, liked him and wanted him to stay, I wasn't one of them. Addy wasn't one of them. I think you probably was. Obviously, I think we didn't have the podcast at the time. But I don't think anyone was saying this is the guy we need to give a new contract to. Stay in, okay, no problem. But not extend.
No.
So I don't know what anyone was thinking there.
No.
MWA Gunner again, would Mickey fit into Arteta's team?
That's interesting.
I don't know. Look, if he's thinking wide, he hasn't got the energy. If he's thinking as a 10, for me, Mkhitaryan's too sloppy. I think he gives the ball away. He does wonderful things. He's kind of like an attacking version of Mustafi, so you don't notice his mistakes as much because they don't cost you goals. But for me, he gives the ball away so much or loses it in dribbles, but then he'll make a fantastic pass or score or something. So for me, he's not economical enough to be a Arteta player, but that's only my opinion on it.
I think potentially, because similar to how Pep uses Bernardo Silva, I think obviously Bernardo Silva's on a different level to Mickey, but I think he could use Mickey in that way as a winger, but then someone that can actually control it and play those decisive passes. But
for me, the difference is Bernardo works his absolute bollocks off. I think he's the hardest working player in the Prem, probably.
Yes.
Can anyone answer me the question? How is he getting on this year?
Who, Mickey?
Yeah.
I think he's actually doing well at Roma. I know he scored quite a few goals. In that, is he a start every day? I don't think so.
It's funny because he's out on loan, isn't it? So if Arteta fancies him as a player, then it'll be like having a new signing for him next year, you know, and it'll be a new start for Mkhitaryan. For me personally, he's been one of the most disappointing players, not just for us, but for Manchester United. He came with such plaudits from the Bundesliga, and he just never did it. Just not a big, not really, just didn't suit our English Premier League. Just not tough enough for it.
And I think you've listened to Wenger for too many years. Saying like a new signing just makes me shiver.
Yeah, maybe
everyone was like a new signing for at all times. Oh, he's been out for a week, he's come back, it's like a new signing. It was our excuse for not signing players.
Bellerin was like a new signing last night.
Yeah, they always are. We've only got 8 players, but they're like new signings.
Come on.
FPL Canada, we should appreciate the positive performances tonight as there were many, and skip over the negative of Mustafi being a Sunday League pub player who somehow found himself at Arsenal. The team fought shorthanded for 60 minutes and never gave up. It's a turning point in the season. I think we've pretty much been over all of that.
Yeah, it was good though. I like that. He's supporting the team. Good.
Yeah. Srinath, I thought the double jeopardy red plus penalty for denying goal scoring opportunity was scrapped. When was it brought in again? Am I imagining it? Again, covered it. It wasn't brought in again. People don't seem to know what they're doing. But they went to Peter Walton on BT. Again, I watched it back. And he said, yep, he's denied a goal scoring opportunity. It's definitely a red card. And I thought, so you've got the ref on the pitch that don't know the rules, the pundit ref don't know the rules, and apparently VAR don't know the rules, which is always helpful. Mustafi's pass resulted in Tammy Abraham on goal, 1-on-1 v Leno. I don't know if anyone noticed, but Mustafi did track back when Luiz made the challenge. Abraham could have still scored the goal, or Mustafi would have blocked it. Was that tackle really warranted? The bloke next to me, next to my friend in the ground, blamed Luiz, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
I think we covered that incident so much. Addy, unless you've got anything new to add there.
I was just going to say, imagine if Luiz said, okay, cool, let me know. I'm going to let you roll the ball in the net. I'm not going to tackle you. I think everyone would be up in arms if he didn't actually try and attempt to the goal.
That was exactly my argument with this guy in the ground. He was about 100 years old, so I kind of felt bad arguing with him.
There's nothing wrong with 100-year-old people. You're talking to one tonight.
Yeah, I thought it might fall over if the volume got too loud. Sandeep Singh again. Chelsea next 3 games are Leicester, United and Spurs, while ours will be against Burnley, Newcastle and Everton, with 2 of them at home.
We're going to win the league.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've now got as many draws as the Invincibles, so we just need to win the next 20 games and we'll be all right.
It was a great stat. Did you see that one today? I think it was only the bottom two in the Premier League have lost more than us, was it? Oh. And only the top two of the Premier League have... It's a stupid stat. Do you know what I'm talking about, Tony?
Yeah. Only the bottom two have won less than us. Only the top two or three have won more...
lost more than us.
Lost more than us, sorry. Yeah, so sorry, how'd that question end up? And hopefully this game proves us confidence. Can we close the gap? Is top four on? For me, I was talking about this to someone. The issue with them having Leicester United and Spurs is some of them are picking up points. Unless they're all draws, then it kind of doesn't help. Because, okay, Chelsea may drop points to Leicester, but then Leicester are gaining points. United, they may be United, but then Chelsea are gaining points. So either way, someone pulling, not pulling away, but someone's getting points. You can kind of only hope that if all three of them sort of get 4 points out of it, that's probably the best we can hope for.
Yeah, don't you think though, if because of the nonsense state of the league this year, if any of those teams, and I include ourselves, can just put a run of 4 or 5 victories together, it puts a whole new complexion on it. And it's such a strange league table this year that if we can win those next 3 games and go into the next 2 with a bit of confidence, suddenly we win 5 on the trot and we will be back in contention at least going into the last month or so of the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. As I said, it's just the annoyance that Chelsea's games are all against each other, so someone's going to be pulling away. You'd ideally want, if we have a winning streak, to coincide with everyone else dropping points.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not possible when they're all playing each other. Vishad, how immense was Xhaka last night? He has been exemplary since Arteta arrived, in my opinion. Was last night the final straw for Mustafi, despite actually showing small signs of improvement in the last few weeks?
Good squad player. Get rid of him at the end of the season.
Yep.
It's just how many final straws has he had?
Yeah. We haven't got anyone to replace him with. You've got long-term injuries. We need him.
If Socrates isn't back, do you start... Well, he's going to start on Monday, isn't he? Because Luiz is out.
I think he'll play...
Or does he go holding Socrates?
I think he goes holding Socrates.
Interesting. That's what he done in the first round or the third round. Keys to the Kingdom. Clay, disclosure. I didn't watch the game, but was this a writing on the wall for Lacazette in Premier League game? Surely Martinelli keeps his job on the left with Aubameyang moving to centre forward.
Go on.
Well, no, I said, look, I think Martinelli made himself undroppable last night, which causes problems. Well, for me, it doesn't cause a problem. It does take Lacazette out of the team. And that's not a reflection on his performance yesterday. But as I said, if you look, you might not think Martinelli made himself undroppable. But if you do think that, who's the one that drops out? And for me, it's Lacazette.
Tony, we talked about this in the last podcast. Much as I've been trying to support Lacazette, just because I support the players and don't see why everyone is slagging him off so much at the moment. And I think when they are all fit again, he probably is the one to drop out, because we will have Aubameyang going down the middle and we will have Martinelli on the left and we will have Pepe on the right. That's probably the way it will go. But can I just play you this?
Lacazette today, again, he didn't score, but he contributed. Amazing performance.
Amazing. That's why. And he sacrificed a lot for the team. And sometimes he may lack this a little bit energy at the end because he's doing extra work. But I am so happy.
So, Liam, your comment, MAA Gunner and all the rest you're slagging you off, have your opinions. It's a game of opinions. That's why we do the podcast, because it's all about our opinions. But that's the opinion of the manager that you're all saying is wonderful, and he thinks he's amazing, to quote him. So get off his back.
Devil's advocate, is Arteta going to go, he's shit and fat and never scores?
You watch the press conference.
No, I'm saying, but is he going to, even if he thought he's shit and fat and never scored?
Amazing. If he didn't like him, there's lots of neutral things you say. It's not about one player. All the team are good. They all fought hard. There's lots of ways of answering that question. He, amazing. There are his words. Amazing.
I bet he would have said the same about Mustafi. And everyone else wants him dropped. So Arteta does things, as I said, he speaks very cleverly. And he tries to get the confidence up of every player. As you said with Hector, are you fit enough to play? Yes, okay, you're playing. He does that with everybody. He's not slated anyone. He's given everyone a chance. And I just think that's... Look, I think Lacazette did play well. But I don't expect him to answer that question any differently, even if Lacazette had had a 1 out of 10.
No, but my point is, Tony, is that he's still, after that game where we've finally got a game where we can all get behind that team, where we can really support them, where the fans in the stadium sung their nuts up for 90 minutes, and yet we still have to find somebody to slag off. Why do you have to have a player to slag off?
He's not slagging him off. He's saying, does he come out of the team? The questions are valid.
I'm talking about reading the group last night, you know?
Oh, I didn't read it, so I can't comment.
I think, obviously... I think maybe it's the frustration of of the previous matches and him not scoring in, what, 7 or 8 games now. But again, similar to Ozil, he was ineffective when we went down to 10 men. I think Lacazette did the job that he had to do because we went down to 10 men. It wasn't going to be a thing where he was going to stay, play behind on the last shoulder of the striker. It was him sitting in front of the midfield, and he did that job perfectly, won the ball back a few times. To be fair, when he did get his chance, he put it in the back of the net, but unfortunately it was offside. But I think Lacazette did what he had to do, and which is why Arteta has rated him and will keep backing him. It's because you know with Lacazette, he's going to run and work his socks off. Obviously, his job's to put the ball in the back of the net, but from my point of view, he's doing the basics well, and he's getting that part of the game done really well.
You wasn't obviously on here last week. Does he stay in the team when Aubameyang's back?
When Aubameyang is back, because, as you said, Martinelli has played his way into the team, Lacazette will get dropped. And that's the honest truth.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's what I've said.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that why is he just getting so much criticism after a performance like that? He didn't play badly yesterday.
I'm not saying you're lying, but I can't comment on this because I've not seen any.
No, there have been. I've heard a lot of people that slagging him off, and it's like, I think it's just that agenda from previous matches, and I don't understand why.
I've long since said that Arsenal fans refuse to have they can't say if they think someone's shit, they can't then go and say he's had a good game, or vice versa. You still get, like, I actually read a thread of someone yesterday saying, Xhaka's shit, I can't believe he's still at the club.
Yeah.
It's like, give me a break. Like, okay, you can think that, but when he's played like that, that's not the first comment that comes to mind. It's the opposite side of things, that people have decided he's shit over the last 6 weeks. And as I said, I thought he played well yesterday, but especially as he didn't score, people just go, oh, yeah, didn't score again, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Arsenal fans especially, it might be the rest of the whole world, but Arsenal fans just refuse to change their opinion or let something go against their opinion, and it's ridiculous. And I've said on here since probably day one of the podcast. Keys to the Kingdom, Clay again. How does Leno walk with balls being approximate size of cantaloupes? Using his legs, probably. MWA Gunner, Arteta has more or less improved each and every player apart from one. Does Tony have any insight on how we brought him and who scouted him? He's talking about Mustafi, by the way. I remember losing Gabriel in pre-season. BFG was out for the season because Koscielny was just coming back from Euros and we were linked, so our fans were begging for it. He was a Stats DMA signing. Wenger wanted Manolas. Stats DNA wanted Mustafi. We ended up overpaying because of the shortage and it was getting late in the window. That was it. It was when the window was still open into the season. We actually played the first three games, I think it was. I remember drawing 0-0 at Leicester. I think we lost 4-3 to Liverpool at home. We drew 0-0 at Leicester and then we beat Watford 3-0. And then I think he came in after that. But Pat fans were actually begging for it at the time. But I think it was one of them. We want a new shiny toy without really caring.
Mm-hmm.
Golson fans said, no clicks, please. I don't know what that means. So I'll move on. Saka Blood Clut Yang says, do you agree Kante hasn't been the same since his injury and is now Torreira is better than Kante? I mean, go back 4 weeks and people were telling you Torreira was shit and he couldn't get in our team and he was playing as a auxiliary number 10. I still think Kante's playing too high up as well, but I don't really care because it's not our problem. Halls of Marble, Gary Neville said that our defence is uncoachable. We have looked better structurally since Arteta came back, but Mustafi et al. Are still making mistakes. Is Neville right? Personally, I argued with this in the time. I don't think anyone's uncoachable. Our defence has clearly got better since Arteta's been in. Our shape, our structure, we're conceding far less chances. I think Neville was wrong then, and I still think he's wrong now.
Agreed.
I agree.
Halls of Marble again. Lacazette has dipped immensely. He looks sluggish and slow at Chelsea. Could it be his publicised alleged indiscretions are affecting him?
The funny thing is, those are old. It's old news. It's not even like something just coming out in the paper now, but it's something that happened last year. So
that long ago, I've not read the story.
It's long ago. It's just coming out to the forefront now. But I don't. These are the same fans again. When Lacazette was scoring all the crucial goals last year against Liverpool, against Everton, like all them goals, they were screaming his name. But then, obviously, they have dried up now. But then, I don't know. I just don't understand some people.
I also, just to add to that, I don't think he looked slow and sluggish yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm one of his biggest critics. So, but I thought he played well yesterday. I don't think he looked slow and sluggish. He didn't look like scoring, but as you said, he played slightly deeper. We had to leave the Martinelli and Pepe high and wide pace, and Lacazette dropped in. I don't think... I'm one of these people that thinks he's never really going to score anyway, but I don't think in that position you even expect him to. But yeah, slow and sluggish, definitely not. Well, not for me. Should Crayola sponsor us? We seem to have more draws than them. They probably couldn't afford it. Kernos, Martinelli, ice cold. Other than the fact that he's a Luis Suarez Messi reincarnate, are they dead? We need to give this guy a lifetime contract. And Torreira, 9 out of 10. Always saw the free man when the ball came into him. Freed up space for others. Thoughts on both? I will say that I know Emery's big problem with playing Torreira deep was he didn't trust him with the ball. And to be honest, I would have still played him deep, but it's one of the reservations I've always had with him. That he is a bit sloppy in possession. But I thought yesterday he was very solid, very safe, played the right pass. And at times, there was one time he hoofed the ball to no one about 70 yards away. But it was the right thing to do. We're under pressure and he smash it. I don't know if any of you have anything.
Just the point on Martinelli, was it give him a lifetime contract? Can I just say this? You know, Lacazette was our player of the season 2 years ago. Was it last year?
Yeah.
All right, just be a bit careful with your statements. You know, let's be logical. He's having a really good run of form. That might dip. He might not turn into the best player that we all hope he's going to be. Let's not make ridiculous statements like that. Sooner or later, in 3 months' time, if he hasn't scored, you'll all be on his back calling him a cunt. So Lacazette's not the worst player in the world. Martinelli's not the best. Let's just put some context into it.
I was just gonna add that point with Torreira playing deep, which is why that axis of Torreira Xhaka works well, because Xhaka, for all his deficiencies, is actually a good player on the ball. So I think that's why that Torreira and Xhaka a tandem works well, because Torreira is the one that's gonna win the ball back, and feed it off to Xhaka.
That's what surprised me yesterday, that he didn't, for the most of the game, he didn't have Xhaka next to him because Xhaka was deeper.
Okay, yes.
He just picked the... He didn't do anything spectacular, but he picked the right pass and he gave it to people when they had time, so they weren't particularly under pressure. And it's one of them performances where if you want to be ultra critical and you are a complete cunt, you'll say, oh, he didn't pass the ball forward. Don't care. But as I said, with him, it's always been one of my reservations on him, and yesterday I thought he'd done it really well. I was probably, thinking back on it, probably unlucky to miss out on my 3-2-1. Liam, who's obviously a host on here, if this hasn't disrupted Arteta's hair, will anything ever? It's drawn on. It has to be. It just doesn't move.
Incredible hair.
On a more serious note, how do you guys feel we really needed tonight? Felt as though it highlighted our squad limitations and what needs priority in the transfer window this or next. Plus, maybe it's the performance and result that can be used as a catalyst to get us winning. Again, we've covered that, and let's hope it is the jump start we need.
Hey, lads, how are we, boys?
I thought I saw you pop in. I thought, fucking hell, we're not going to get finished now, are we? Because that cunt from fucking Australia just fucking turned up.
I thought I'd pop in and I'd cunt all over Lacazette for a minute, and I heard some Martinelli cunting, and I'm thinking, ah, oh, for fuck's sake, give this kid a lifetime contract. Like, seriously, he's 18. Let this kid just... He's unbelievable. But now, on a serious note, he's actually a really good player to watch. A lifetime contract. Yeah, I understand where we're all coming from, but let's just settle it down. I do agree with you, Tony. So Darren won it.
Yes.
Darren does. Yeah. So anyway, boys, look, sorry I couldn't make the show, but yeah, I just accidentally hit the Skype call and I thought, who am I listening to here? Enjoy the show. I will edit it and get it uploaded later.
All right. You'll have it very soon, hopefully. Hey,
we've got three questions to go.
Did you give Granite a prize?
Yep.
Yeah.
I even got him 3-2-1.
Oh, good lad. Enjoy, boys.
Cheers.
That was Tez. Carry on, Tone.
Three questions to go. I think we've covered it. Next one's AFC Edit Guy. When Aubameyang comes back, do you drop Lacazette for Martinelli? We covered. Romy, do you think Ainsley Maitland-Niles and Bellerin are deployed differently? Does Ainsley Maitland-Niles have different qualities compared to Bellerin? Again, we touched on that earlier. I think so. And I think it might be a horses for courses job. Romy, if I brought Danny...
So just one thing on that. I mean, I know we were a bit shocked that Bellerin got back in, but we've just seen in the last, 2 weeks, Harry Kane, long-term injury, Rashford, long-term injury. Because these players, there's a lot of talk at the moment about players being overplayed. Ainsley Maitland-Niles has had a fucking long season. First chance we got to rest him, absolutely rest him. You know, it was a good decision, I think, all round yesterday.
Yeah, again, in hindsight especially, but yeah, I can't argue. Last question, Romy again. If I brought a Danny Ceballos kit, should I be worried? I don't know if any of you saw, he commented on Hector's goal celebration post on Instagram, and it sort of looked like a goodbye message. It was in Spanish and someone translated it, so the translation might have been awful, but it was sort of like, well, did you see it, Addy? I can't remember exactly what it said.
It said that it's sad that I won't be seeing your left foot anymore or something like that. But I was actually going to mention that now as well, but I don't know how to read it, because again, yeah, it was someone translated it. So was it a true translation? Yeah, but I'm just literally, I just opened the tweet now and they're saying that Danny Ceballos is in talks with Real Madrid to cancel his loan at Arsenal to find him a new club on loan till the end of the season.
The one thing this screams to me is we must have incomings because we're so fucking short. Like, you can't... Look, has Danny Ceballos set the world? Like, no, he had one good game against Burnley and a couple of other okay ones, but we can't just keep losing numbers.
Yeah.
Right. It must be a thing because we keep talking about the indecision of Arteta and all the players we've seen get warm up, get their tracksuit off, put their kit on, not come off, sit down again. So Ceballos, you know, hasn't been even, you know, he's been on the bench, but he hasn't looked like coming on, has he? So I think Arteta don't fancy him. And
I was going to say they warmed up directly below me last night and I don't really remember him warming up. As I said it again. Yeah. Sheffield United, that he was on the touchline, but he was just standing there. Like it was like he knew he wasn't going to come on. And yesterday, I don't even remember seeing him warm up, to be honest.
No, yeah,
do you think he might play?
Yeah, I mean, he wants to play football. I mean, looking at it realistically, Arteta's playing Ozil every game. He's got Xhaka and Torreira playing every game. So apart from rotation, when he's played Willock in front of him, Guendouzi in front of him, from his point of view, he wants to play football. There's a European Championships coming up. He wants to play football. He needs to play football. And looking at Arteta's team selection, he's sixth choice, possibly. So I can see why he would want his loan renegotiated. Look at Eddie Nketiah at Leeds. You know, you want him to play football. He's not playing football, so I would understand why he would want to leave.
Oh, I can see it from his point of view. I just mean from our point of view, we can't just keep losing numbers. Even if he was only going to play three times as rotation until the end of the season, if he goes, you need to find another free 90 minutes in someone. Yeah.
But it's not doing anything for Real Madrid, and it's not doing anything for the player. And if they can pull him back, I'm sure they will. I'm sure there's a clause in there. He has to play a certain amount of games.
Yeah, I mean, they tend not to do because if you pay a loan fee, which most loans, especially high profile loans, are done now, and it was strongly reported at the time we did pay quite a hefty loan fee, then everything's in the court of in the team that are bringing the player in. So the ball's in our court, so to speak. So unless they've got an agreement that we get a refund, essentially, and then they can get a loan fee from someone else to put him out for the next, till the end of the season. I don't know, but I think from our point of view, unless we have someone coming in, it would be a very stupid move.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for the questions.
That's a lot of questions. So we're happy. We're going to go to Bournemouth on Monday night. Big rotation, or do we, like Pep Guardiola does with his teams, put out a strong side and try and win this trophy? Paddy?
I think he won't do a big rotation. I think Ainsley Maitland-Niles will come in. I was thinking maybe Ceballos might get a game, but I don't know now. I think if he plays, if Ceballos plays, I think he'll stay. If we don't see no Ceballos, then yeah, no, I can't see him. I can't see him staying to the end of the season. But Lacazette's gonna have to play because Aubameyang's still gonna be out. But yeah, I think you're gonna see majority of the starting lineup that you saw against Chelsea.
And we've got a big gap, Tony. Surely it is a chance to play some of those peripheral players, like Holding should get some time, maybe Nketiah can get some time. Guendouzi can get some time in the middle. Maitland-Niles maybe come back in for Bellerin. Do you think so, Tony?
Yeah, for me, I think you can probably name eight of the team. I think Martinez, Maitland-Niles and Saka play. It's two from three at centre-back because we've only got three fit. It obviously depends on Socrates' fitness. Xhaka starts. Torreira, I think if he's fit, he starts, but he obviously, as you said, he goes down injured multiple times per game, every game. So he might want to give him a rest. So that's another question position. Willock, I think the front three will start. Well, no, it'll be Guendouzi. If it's Guendouzi or Torreira for me, and I think it depends on sort of fitness and fatigue. I think the front three start, and then the 10 positions are a little bit questionable, whether he goes Willock for extra legs. I can't see it being Ceballos, but it's someone that could potentially play there. Or if he sticks with Ozil like he did against Leeds. So I think sort of eight or nine of that team, I'd be pretty confident in saying it will be them. Obviously, I don't know, but I'd be pretty shocked if it's not them on come whenever the team sheet comes out on Monday. I think there's only two or three positions that are sort of up for debate.
Yeah, maybe. I think he'll go a little weaker, but I do think he'll want to win the competition. And I do think Bournemouth will rest everyone because they've just had a good result and they've got a really winnable game after us. And I think he'll want to wrap everyone up in cotton.
Yeah, well, also, we've got 6 days off until Burnley and then 2 weeks off. So I don't see why you'd rest people.
No. But it's just this time of year. You know what I say? We're seeing some pretty serious injuries around at the moment because of the amount of games that we've played over the last 6 weeks. And this is possibly an opportunity to rest players. Anyway, we will find out soon. It's been a good podcast, guys. Thank you, Addy. Nice to meet you. And thanks for joining us.
Yourself. No, thank you.
And Tony, as usual.
Cheers for having me.
It's all right. Ain't my show. It's that Australian show. And maybe I'll be on to host the next one. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Addy, if anyone wants to get hold of you, where can they find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at AddyAds, AddyAdz. So yeah, you can chat me on there as well.
And Tony, you're at clockend_talk. That's your one as well, isn't it? That's where people can reach you. And for those who want to moan at me, I am still haven't changed it. I'm still at Deliguna, as in the city in India, at Deliguna. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for subscribing. And we will see you all next week.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?